Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritis. Today is Saturday, July 17th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Housing Unaffordability and Jobless Claims. So we're going to cover market performance. We're going to cover some data that came out a week or so ago with respect to the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. We're going to look at the National Price Index as well as their 20-city composite. And as today's title represents, it is housing unaffordability. We are at levels we haven't seen since the great financial crisis, the subprime crisis, and in fact, we are superseding those levels. So as I have stated here months ago, we are dealing with a triple whammy and quite possibly a quadruple whammy with the types of scenarios that we have to contend with. We have to deal with the fiscal and monetary policies today that are reminiscent of those same policies that existed in the lead up to the Great Depression and in fact caused the Great Depression. I mean, what we're doing now is blowing those numbers out of the water by an order of magnitude. We have to deal with a scenario today with the fascination of tech stocks and SPACs and a whole bunch of other speculative bets out there on Wall Street that is highly reminiscent of the dot-com boom and bust era. And of course, with housing prices where they are, this is highly reminiscent of the subprime crisis. So there's your triple whammy. And if you want to add a fourth to it, which I think is fairly reasonable, is to make the argument, as we have been here at the Capital News, that we are in a stagflationary environment. So now you got to bring in the 1970s with stagflation. And of course, that being the combination of inflation, and this is going to be high inflation as far as I'm concerned, and high levels of unemployment, of course, with causing and representative of a stagnant economy. Now, again, I like to highlight and really stress the point that we are going to witness, in my analysis, in my opinion, higher prices for the goods and services that we need. Things that we don't need, those prices may very well come down because you don't need them. So those supply-demand dynamics will come in full speed. I'm not concerned with those things. I'm concerned with how you have to live. I am concerned with people at the end of the day. Now, of course, people are making those other goods and services, providing those services that you may not actually need. And so there is going to be that macro effect. But what's that going to lead to? If you have low demand for those goods and you have corporations and businesses, doesn't matter their size, trying to protect their margins and survive, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to cut heads. They're going to cut personnel. So that's leading to the stagflationary environment. That's leading to the higher rates of unemployment. And with the supply chain issues that we still have to contend with one central bank after the next continuing to put the pedal to the metal. And of course, we're going to get to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet here momentarily to discuss that new all-time high. That is, by definition, inflation. So that is the recipe for disaster. That is where we are headed. We are not going to change course. Even if we changed course, the damage has already been done. It is already in the system. It is already making its way through the system. The effects of inflation are not uniform. They are not symmetrical. They take different times. They occur at different rates to different degrees in various parts of the economy. And if you're paying attention to the news, we're not going to have enough time to get into it for today's podcast. But as we have been predicting here and have been discussing here for the past 2 years, riots, protests, revolutions, civil wars, you name it, are taking place. Look at Cuba. Look at South Africa. Look at the protests that continue in Greece and in France and in many other places around the globe. Look at the recent assassinations down in Haiti and a couple other countries. Okay? All hell is breaking loose. You have to pay attention to everything. Not just charts and graphs, not just what the politicians are saying, not just what the economists are saying. You have to look at everything and you have to understand why people are behaving the way that they are. They are not doing these types of things because the cost of living is so affordable. They are doing these things because the cost of living is unaffordable. They can't take it anymore. Plus the lockdowns, plus the restrictions, plus one lunatic after the next in charge of one government after the next. People are sick and tired of it, and rightly so. They are finally starting to wake up. The question is, will it be enough? Is it too late? I hope it's not too late. But at least people are starting to get the picture. They are starting to wake up to what is taking place. Because in this country, here in the United States, we are a banana republic. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean, the White House served up on a silver platter the opportunity to champion the people in Cuba to finally fight themselves free of communist rule for the past 60 years. They can't do it. Jen Psaki, the press secretary, the president, none of them can do it. And that tells you everything you need to know. They can't condemn communism. They think they want to blame this on lack of vaccines and making its way to Cuba, blah, 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 blah. Oh, it couldn't be the 60-year rule of the Castro brothers. Couldn't be any of that. We're supposed to stand for freedom. We're supposed to stand for rule of government by and for the people. Served up on a silver platter, what the people in Cuba are trying to do. Stand up for themselves, for their families, for future generations. Saying enough is finally enough. And our government can't do a damn thing about it. That tells you all you need to know. That's because that's their mentality. This administration and many others before it are more in alignment with the Castro brothers as opposed to George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and the like. Believe me when I tell you. And there's nothing but evidence to point that that is the case. Because what are they trying to pass now? What do they want to talk about now? A $3.5 trillion spending bill. That's what the Democrats want to propose. I told you they were just getting warmed up. More is coming. Doesn't mean that they're going to pass $3.5 trillion. That's how much we bring in tax revenue. Just that. Just $3.5 trillion. These people do not even care anymore. They're not even hiding it anymore. How anybody can support the Democratic Party or the Republican Party is beyond me at this juncture. Truly. I don't know how you can support either of them. But I know people will continue to go into the voting booth and they will continue to vote for these people simply because they tell you what you want to hear. That's all it is. And you're going to continue to get what you've got. And you're going to scratch your head and you're going to wonder why. You have to take a stand. You have to leave these parties. You have to register as an independent, as a libertarian, unaffiliated. You have to leave these parties. You have to stop supporting these people. They do not care about you. Period. End of story. Okay, so that's my little rant. Now let's get down to business. Let's look at some market performance over the week. So we have the dollar index trading at 92.7. So the dollar continues to rally. Number of reasons. This could be a quote-unquote flight to safety in the greenback. And that's just because every other central bank is doing the same song and dance that we are. But given all of the other turmoil, that they might be flocking to the U.S. dollar, at least temporarily. The U.S. dollar on a technical basis, handful of weeks ago, was, you know, really being beaten down. Really a lot of short sellers there pushing down on the dollar. So this could just be a temporary unwind of that process. We'll continue to monitor this closely. But again, the dollar index at 92.70. Bitcoin is currently trading at $31,700 per coin. And of course, that's Bitcoin, not Bitcoin. As far as I'm concerned, this thing should be valued at zero. It could take a while before it gets there, though. Markets did happen to have a rare sell-off on Friday, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average giving back 0.9% to trade at 34,670 points. The S&P 500 gave back about 0.8%, as did the NASDAQ 100, but all are very close to their all-time highs. This is just a slight little pullback, but we'll see if it turns into something more. On the commodity front, we have WTI at $71.43 a barrel, Brent at $73.13 a barrel, a little bit of a pullback with oil as well. And I do believe OPEC is going to be holding another meeting this weekend, I guess, overcoming a recent impasse. So we'll see what the knee-jerk reaction is for the commodity markets either on Sunday evening markets overnight, or we'll just see how it plays out on Monday. Natural gas trading at $3.67. So it's continuing its upward climb as well. Gold and silver sold off. Gold gave back 1% on Friday and now trades at $1,811 an ounce. Silver gave back 2.5%, a big decline, and is now trading at $25.65 an ounce. no justification for this whatsoever. We have real yields getting deeper and deeper into negative territory. We have supposedly this green economy, green environmental movement. Well, you're going to have to use more silver. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So this is pure manipulation as far as I'm concerned within the gold and silver market. But when you see these types of declines, buy low, sell high, these are opportunities to get more precious metals, more mining stocks, and get involved in other commodities as well, because this is just getting started. And this, as far as I'm concerned, is going to be a decade about survival. And it's going to be a question about the things that you actually need. You need commodities, and I'm banking on gold and silver as precious metals and as real money, because they have proven the test of time. And as I said, we are going through the perfect storm, this quadruple whammy of just failed philosophies, failed policies. This is basically rolling up everything that we have done wrong over the past 100 years. We're going to have to deal with all of it in this decade. Gold and silver have withstood the test of time. Empires have come and gone. That's where I'll put some of my resources. I'm not going to bank on Bitcoin. This is their first rodeo. Now, you want to do it, it's your money, it's your risk, your choice, do what you want to do. But be mindful of it. It does not really serve a purpose. There are other cryptos out there that have a use case. There's not many of them, but there are a few. Those might prove the test of time. Bitcoin, in my opinion, is not going to be one of them. So a lot of people have been pointing out recently this massive decline in the price of lumber, which is currently trading at $546 per 1,000 linear board feet. So well below its all-time high that we only witnessed a handful of weeks ago, okay, almost at $1,700. The lumber market is not the commodity market. It is a one piece of a large basket, okay? But this is what a lot of people want to point to say, oh, look, the inflationists are wrong. Those who are arguing for inflation or stagflation are completely wrong. Look at the price of lumber. That's a bunch of nonsense. Even at $546, we are still north, 25% north of lumber's 30-year trading range, okay? Upper trading range. Have a 30-year trading range of $200 to $400, okay? We are still well above it, and that's the question. Where do we settle out? Look at the price of coal. Coal. This is supposed to be a green economy. Coal prices surged to almost $150 a ton. The highest level in a decade. Oh, but no, everything's going green. Oh, yeah. Prices keep going up. Look at copper, look at aluminum, look at steel, look at iron ore. Oil prices, yeah, they got a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction because OPEC is having discussions. It's not going to mean much, as far as I'm concerned. You're going to have knee-jerk reactions. That's it. These prices are marching higher. And we're going to have to deal with it and everything that we deal with, because oil and energy prices are in everything. Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.29%. 1.29%. So again, we have to ask the question, as I always do with this audience, because the Federal Reserve put it in play. If higher yields were indicative of a growing economy, well, then wouldn't falling yields be indicative of a slowing economy? Where's the recovery? And of course, Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, was marched up in front of Congress, House and Senate, last week, giving his semi-annual testimony. A bunch of nonsense, bunch of BS, as was to be expected. Was not able to catch it live, was able to read a little bit of commentary on it. And from what I gather from some sources that I follow, there was really only maybe one or two hard questions. Okay, and of course, Jay Powell doesn't answer them. He deflects. But at least the questions were asked. But nope, there's still a long way to go with the recovery. Anything that they can do to kick the can down the road, anything that they can argue about to justify continuing to print more money, to expand their balance sheet, to buy more U.S. treasuries, to buy more mortgage-backed securities, anything that they can do to justify it, they're going to continue to do. And of course, the Fed has their dual mandate of price stability, which they have just, I mean, it's no joke. I mean, they just fail time and time again, and full employment. Well, we got a long way to go with employment. So that's what they're going to use. That's going to be the Fed's crutch. That's going to be their excuse as to why, well, we have to continue to throw more money into the system. We have to continue to expand our balance sheet because we have to get everybody working. We have to get the unemployment rate back down to 3.5% where it was pre-pandemic. We have to do it, no matter how long it takes. And then, of course, the next crisis that they and other central banks will use, not may, they will use as justification to continue with these policies is the climate, quote-unquote, crisis. Because there's always climate. I mean, maybe you're in recession, maybe you're not. Maybe you're in an expansionary period. So the Federal Reserve and other central banks can't really justify doing certain things. But hey, there is always climate. Something's always taking place there in the climate, and you can always point to a storm, a flood, a tsunami, something somewhere to say, oh, well, it has to be because of the climate crisis, and we all have to get together as good stewards, as good people on this planet, as good central bankers, and print more money so we can stop the floods. I mean, it's complete nonsense, but that will be their story. That will be their song and dance. And now you have the Japanese central bank coming out and announcing that they will purchase quote-unquote green bonds in other denominated currencies. So they're not even sticking with their own governments anymore. They're just going to go out and buy everything. They are going to go out and buy everything. This is the Great Reset, ladies and gentlemen. You will own nothing and you will like it because the central banks are printing all this money out of thin air and they're going up and they're buying all the assets or they're assisting their buddies to go out there and buy all up the assets. That's why we're talking about housing. Because BlackRock, Blackstone, hedge funds, pension funds, you name it, they're close to the central banks, they get the funny money first, they go out and they buy real assets with it, and they don't care about the price. Price doesn't matter when you're playing with house money, when you're playing with funny money. They don't care what the price is, they want the real asset. And then they'll turn around and they'll rent it back to you. That's how this is going to work, that's how this is playing out, it is in our faces. What's being done about it? Absolutely nothing. The Democrats don't care. The Republicans don't care. They're not stopping a damn thing. And in fact, most of them applaud Jay Powell and company at the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the globe. So Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note, 1.29%. We'll continue to monitor that closely. Now on to the initial jobless claims. So for the week ending July 10th, on a seasonally adjusted basis, the number came in at 360,000, the lowest reading since, I believe, March 14th of 2020, and the lowest reading, really, since we had the massive spike in initial jobless claims when everything just shut down. The prior week's level was revised upward by 13,000. That is quite a large number. I can't recall seeing that big of a revision in quite a while. So last week's figure was revised upward by 13,000 to now stand at 386,000. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis for the week ending July 10th, the number comes in at 383,000. For the week ending July 3rd, continuing claims on a seasonally adjusted basis come in at 3.24 million. A week-over-week decrease of 126,000. Non-seasonally adjusted continued claims come in at 3.11 million. A week-over-week decrease of 145,000. For the week ending July 10th, for the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, one of the children of the Nobody Cares Act, that number comes in at 96,000. So we are still well north of 400,000 when we take into consideration the state unemployment benefits, which is the initial claims, and then obviously the PUA program. So that still puts us well north of twice the number that we were used to seeing prior to the pandemic, which was 200,000, 205,000, maybe you'd get 250,000 here or there. So we are still far from out of the woods, and we still have many, many distortionary effects that we are still contending with, which I announced over a year ago when all of these shenanigans started with all of these programs, that the jobs market was going to be extremely difficult to sort of dissect because of all of the distortionary effects that governments and central banks were going to employ, and we are still contending with that today. So when we look at the aggregate number, this will be for the week ending June 26th. Recall that this aggregate total lags by a couple of weeks, taking into consideration regular state unemployment benefits, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, the PUA and PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and work share, gives us a grand total of 13.8 million Americans still claiming some form of unemployment insurance. This is a week-over-week decline of 372,000. The biggest drop-offs came in the PUA program, giving back 138,000 in the PEUC program, week-over-week decrease of 198,000. So these programs are unwinding. There are several states around the country that have already said enough is enough. You're not getting these extra federal benefits. We're not paying them out. You got to get back to work. Small businesses need you. Get off the couch. Get back to work. Other states have not done so, and so we're still a couple months away until all of these benefits are expired. And I imagine once we witness that we're going to see some massive drop-offs in these numbers, unless, of course, Congress passes some sort of extension. I don't necessarily foresee that happening. They already have that extra child care credit that is being thrown out there. I think those checks are starting to go out last week. So that's just more funny money from Uncle Sam. And of course, there's no production for it. So all this is going to do is increase the price of all of these goods and services out there, because that's how it works. If it was that simple, all you had to do was print money and there was never any negative consequence for anybody, then why did it take so long to figure this out? It doesn't work. If it worked, Argentina, Lebanon, Syria, Zimbabwe, all of these banana republics, true, legitimate banana republics, would be the largest economies on the planet. Not working that way, is it, ladies and gentlemen? No, because it doesn't work that way. Very simple. But we're led to believe here in this country, in Europe, in Japan, just call it Western civilization, hell, even in China, you are led to believe that central banks know all, that governments know all, that you can do no wrong. We can print the money, we can borrow the money, we can spend the money, and everything will turn out nice and rosy. Peaches and cream. It's not going to play out that way. So at 13.8 million, that gives us a de facto unemployment rate of 10%. Now, I did not go over the jobs report. I would like to do so in another podcast, hopefully this weekend. So I hope to get that out as well. And I'd like to get another one out that focuses on these riots in Cuba, almost a civil war breaking out in South Africa, these protests, everything. Just all of the geopolitical nonsense that we knew was coming. Because you can't continue to do all of the stuff that I just mentioned with no consequences. It's coming and it's only going to get worse because they're not stopping. Now, if we look at the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, hold your horses here. Hang on to yourself. We got $8.201 trillion. $8.201 trillion is now the size of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. This is an all-time high. This is a week-over-week increase of $104 billion. $104 billion. Remember, the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing program is supposed to be a minimum of $120 billion per month, purchasing a combination of U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Now, they do say, in fairness to them, minimum, so they can go above it. But really, you're trying to think, well, you know what? Look, if you're going to say $120 billion, that's sort of what we're expecting that number to be. I mean, maybe you got to, you know, maybe a little bit higher here and there if you think it's justified, which of course they do. But, you know, it should be really close to that. For the month, just for the week, we did $104 billion. Okay? These people don't care. They are not stopping. I told you this 2 years ago, that central banks were trapped. This was the first presentation I did, Capital Economics, on our website, The Capital News, and I'm sure you can still find it archived on our YouTube channel as well. Are central banks trapped? The answer then was yes, most definitely more so today, but they don't care either. They really don't care because they have an agenda. Their agenda is to print and to buy up everything and to give the funny money to their buddies so that they can go up and buy the things that these central banks are not allowed to purchase. That's how it works. It's all about power, consolidation, and control, and it's all in our face. Okay? So let's put this into context, shall we? $8.2 trillion, an all-time high, a week-over-week increase of $104 billion. Let's just go back to October of last year. The balance sheet then was at $7.07 trillion. So we have added more than $1 trillion to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet since October of last year. Has not even been a full year. Now, why do I stress this point? And I stress it because from 1913, 1914, when the Federal Reserve opened their doors to the great financial crisis, 2008-09, the Fed's balance sheet was just below $900 billion. Okay? It took them their entire existence from inception to the great financial crisis to get their balance sheet up to about $900 billion. Now, in the course of less than 12 months, they have expanded their balance sheet by even more than that. This is a banana republic, ladies and gentlemen. Look at the charts and graphs that I mentioned. Check out thecapitalnews.com, Capital Economics presentations, what we did back, I believe it was in February, where we were looking at monetary measures. Look at those charts and graphs. And I'm going to have to update it because these lunatics aren't stopping. It's getting even worse. Okay? And they are not going to stop. And if the government should pass $3.5 trillion here, another trillion there, how's it going to be financed? Well, these lunatics are going to have to print the money, and it's just going to go parabolic. And with it, all of the prices of all of the goods and services, especially those that you need. Now, if we were just to go back to the beginning of June, so that reading on the Fed's balance sheet would have been June 2nd, to the most recent reading, 714, that was an increase of $266 billion. And we still got a couple more weeks to go in the month of July. So from there, policy, their policy, quantitative easing, again, $120 billion a month, again, at minimum. 2 months, $240 billion. We're already surpassing that. And we still got a couple more weeks to go. And the stock market was making all-time highs this week, too, despite the sell-off over the past couple of days. Well, you know what, Sherlock. Well, look what's going on here. This is not correlation. This is causation. Very easy experiment. Stop printing the money. Take it out. Stop doing it. Let's see where the stock market stands. I guarantee it's not at these levels. Much, much, much lower. Then, because we do want to talk about housing unaffordability, I would be negligent if I didn't talk about what the Federal Reserve is doing with mortgage-backed securities, one of the reasons why housing prices continue to climb higher and higher. So again, we have the Fed's, so a further breakdown of the Fed's balance sheet and their holdings of mortgage-backed securities this week have hit an all-time high and now stands at $2.4 trillion in mortgage-backed securities. That's a week-over-week increase of $83 billion. Now, why do I stress that? Because in their quantitative easing policy of that minimum $120 billion per month, their breakdown was supposed to be $80 billion in U.S. Treasuries, $40 billion per month. Remember, per month in mortgage-backed securities. In 1 week, they just purchased $83 billion in mortgage-backed securities. And Jay Powell has the audacity, he has the nerve to go out there and admit that housing prices are high, housing prices are frothy, housing prices are so high that it's pricing out generations of Americans from purchasing a home. Well, but we're going to continue to throw gasoline on this fire. Why? Because they don't care about you, ladies and gentlemen. They don't work for you. Don't you understand this yet? And these idiots aren't elected. They're appointed. Nobody overrules them. Congress could if they wanted to, but they don't want to. Because Congress wants to make a whole bunch of promises that they know that they can't keep. Somebody's got to fund it. Somebody's got to finance it. That's why I stress this. Money is the cornerstone of all of this. You can get all jacked up and upset about the cultural wars, and I'm there with you. But you have to focus more of your efforts and energy on this because that's where it comes from. That's where the dissolution, that's where the crumbling, the collapse of society comes from. It comes from a weak economy. It comes from these types of policies. You cannot do this. That's the cause. That's where it comes from. And all of that brainwashing and all of that propaganda, guess what? All that needs finance too. They're all a part of the machine. That's why you have to strike at the root of the problem, and the root of the problem is the financing of it. That's what this podcast is about. That's why I'm trying to wake up as many people as I can and educate as many people as I can about these issues, because this is where it all starts. End of story. I will not be convinced otherwise. I've studied this too much. Now, on to the housing market. Okay, so the Fed's not stopping with the mortgage-backed security. So, if we are going to look at the S&P Case-Shiller U.S. National Home Price Index, we are at a reading of 249. Okay, great, fantastic. What does that mean? Well, it peaked during the subprime crisis at 184.5 points. All right, well, just quite a big difference there in a very short period of time. And when you look at other metrics, too, if you look at what I believe it's the OECD, Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, blah, 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 they have a lot of economic data as well. And their housing unaffordability data is through the roof, and it is surpassing that of the subprime crisis. And I believe they are looking at sort of the average home price against average rent prices. And of course, rent prices are going up too, rent, which is no surprise. Rent prices tend to lag housing prices, which makes intuitive sense. And so we are going to start experiencing higher rent prices as we progress through this year and next year. And we're already seeing a lot of rent prices going up in some of these larger cities, including New York City, because people are coming back to the city. People, that's where a lot of people like to live. Maybe they tried the suburbs. Maybe they tried the country. They don't like it. They don't want to be a 10, 15-minute drive from everywhere. They want to go out, go to the market, walk back and forth and call it a day, get things a little bit here and there. They don't want to drive all over the place. Okay, so they're going back. Or people were enticed to go back because rental prices did fall because everybody left. And said, oh, well, look at low prices. That it's every, now everybody's thinking the same thing. It's a demand rush pushing those prices up. So that's no surprise either. And that's, of course, just going to make it more difficult for many people in this country to save and to, if they should desire, there's nothing wrong with renting, but if they should desire to purchase a house, it's going to make it that much more difficult because they have to put a bigger portion of their income to rent. So it makes it more difficult to save up for a down payment to go purchase a house. Okay, you see how all of this is connected. So the house price index is through the roof. Year over year basis, you have percentages that we have not seen since the subprime crisis, and we're about to surpass that. If we continue with this trend, and we're very well likely going to for at least the next few months, I would argue probably for the remainder of this year at least, that we're going to see year over year increases on a percentage basis that rival and surpass the subprime crisis. Now, one thing that does make a difference, and this could turn out to be somewhat of a big difference too, between what we are witnessing today versus the subprime crisis is today, a lot of people who are getting this money to go purchase these homes already have the money. They have good credit scores. Again, a lot of them are their corporations, their businesses, their Blackstone, their BlackRock, their pension funds. They have the money. Subprime crisis, we were giving money to people who didn't have money. We were giving money to people who didn't have a job. And that didn't work out too well. I mean, surprise, surprise. So this thing, as far as I'm concerned, that reason gives this more legs to run. And despite the fact that if you're paying close attention on a week-by-week basis to some of the other housing metrics that come out with mortgage applications and the like, home sales, this, that, or the other, you're seeing a little bit of a fall off, a little bit of a downtrend there. But prices continue to go higher. And that's because you have those corporations, you have those entities coming into the market, and they don't care. They're coming in and buying the house in cash. In cash. They don't care. They own it. They just want the asset because it's about power, control, consolidation. And people are going to need a place to live. And guess what? That's going to give these businesses, these corporations, pricing power. They're going to charge what they want to charge. And they'll get it. Or they'll kick you out. Because we've already gone through the moratoriums. We've already gone through the forbearance. That stuff is coming to an end. It's coming to an end. And what are we going to do with all these people? If they don't have jobs by then, if Uncle Sam isn't sending out more stimulus checks, how are they going to make the rent? Because it was forbearance. It was not forgiveness. All that money is still owed. It's going to be millions of Americans. You could have a massive homeless crisis, which in some states is already a big issue. So as I have been stating here for well over a year, when they started all of these policies, when they passed the Nobody Cares Act 1.0, I said, this is completely unjustified. It's completely ridiculous. It's completely distortionary, and it's going to lead to all of these problems that we are witnessing. I said, free was never so expensive because everybody thought, oh, fantastic, I'm going to get a stimulus check. And then you got another one, and then you got another one, and you thought everything was fantastic. Now you're paying for it. Now you're paying for it. And what you received is going to be a fraction of what you have to pay out. But people can't connect the dots because they're not educated. They think it's free. They buy into it, hook, line, and sinker. They're so desperate. They just want something. They give me a bigger crumb than what I'm used to getting, and they'll be thankful for it. People are going to be in for a rude awakening in this country. One of the reasons why we aren't protesting and rioting like they are in other countries is because we still have abundance of a lot of things here still. We still have the All-Star Games. We still have microwave dinners. We still have drama with celebrities. That will distract people in this country. Until all of these other things take root, take hold, and prices go up, rent goes up, energy prices go up, jobless rate goes up. It's just a continuation, unfortunately, of what we're going to witness. I do not like saying these things, but this is what you get when you pass these policies. I'm not here to lie to you. I'm not here to make things look pretty because they're not. I wish they were. But this is what happens. It's like a chemistry equation. You mix this chemical with this one, you're going to get a certain reaction every single time. Same thing stands here. You keep pumping this funny money. You keep spending money we don't have. You keep putting people down. You keep saying tell people they are non-essential. This is what is going to happen. It is all going to blow up. It is going to be a nasty reaction. So, I hope you get what's going on here. I hope you understand why housing is so unaffordable. And we are in a stagflationary environment. We are in the early innings of it. This is likely going to last through at least this decade because we can't just make our way through all of this sludge and waste and garbage that they have thrown into the system. We're just not going to cleanse ourselves of it in a very timely manner. This is going to be a very, very rough decade, especially for a lot of poor nations and poor people around the globe, including the United States of America. So buckle up and prepare yourself because it's just getting started. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.